$1 million. So I decided not to do that.
Oh, you just didn't have an extra $1 million hanging around, did you?
No.
No, okay. Norma, could we start really from the very basics? There's a good possibility that our listeners may not have any idea what we are referring to when we use the term initiative rights, because that's a term that's basically I'm unfamiliar with myself. And also, may I ask you to speak up just a little bit more, okay, into your telephone,
okay,
please? All right. So why don't we start? What is initiative rights? I mean, why do we need it? What does it mean?
Well, our rights to initiative petition are guaranteed in our state constitution. And when the people need to address an issue and the legislature is not addressing it, they have the right to go out and gather signatures and have something put on the ballot. And then everybody in the state can vote on it. And that is a basic right in America. It's a check and balance of, you know, we hire all these politicians to go to Washington or to our state capitol to do things for us. And if they're not listening to us, we have this check and balance called initiative.
Now, initiative, that just sounds like, well, I'm going to take the initiative to do something, so I'm going to do it. What's the big deal?
What's the big deal? Well, it's kind of like we the people are able to do what our legislators are able to do. We don't have to get elected and go to the Capitol and be a legislator in order to change laws. All we have to do is contact the Secretary of State's office, decide on the wording that we want in our to change our constitution, and go out and gather signatures. And if we get enough, which in this state happens to be the largest amount of signatures that any state has to get in order to get something on a ballot, and after this last election, the number of signatures we would have to get something on the ballot now is 240,000 signatures.
Wait a minute, hold on a second. Let me stop you right there. You just threw an anchor overboard, and we already have a hole in the boat. Are you saying that if we want our legislators to put something to a vote, first we must gather 250,000 signatures from people who are requesting that our legislator does so?
Well, actually, we can request anything from our legislators, but if they don't do it, this is how we can do it ourselves, we the people.
Okay, but that just forces their hand to vote on the issue. Is that correct?
Yes, everybody gets to vote on it. It's kind of like when, it's exactly like when we have the argument about chicken fighting in this state.
Yes.
Some people thought that it was a bad thing, and some people thought that it was just fine. And in order to settle the argument, we all voted on it. And, of course, we decided not to have chicken fighting in our state.
Okay. Now, seems like a lot of work. Now, 250,000 signatures. I'm not certain if our listeners have any appreciation how much work that is. Could you sort of outline how much work is that? How much time, money, effort? What does it take to get 250,000 signatures? And by the way, if you had exactly 250,000 signatures, would they accept them, or would they say, well, these signatures are invalid and you have to get some more?
Well, would they accept them? We'll go into that in a minute.
Okay.
How much work it is. I actually gathered signatures for an initiative once in this state, and I got probably a page, which is 20 signatures, a page every hour. And so divide that into 240,000 signatures, and it takes a lot of man hours. And I was standing in a high traffic area. If I'm actually going out and gathering them from my neighbors, I'd have to go door to door to door to door. I was in a grocery store and gathering, well, I had four boards with signature things on it, and they could, I could have four people signing at once and still could only get about 20 signatures an hour. And it was a high-traffic grocery store. And then when we finally get all the signatures together, and we have to get it in 90 days, when we get those together and take them to the Secretary of State's office, she looks them over and makes sure that they're all valid voter signatures from our state. And then they look over the whole thing and they send it to the Supreme Court and they decide whether or not the wording, which is called the gist statement at the top of the page, is constitutional. So it can be thrown out at any point. If they decide it's not, there's not enough valid signatures, or that if the signature gatherers may have not been valid signature gatherers, or if a page isn't notarized, or if the judge in the Supreme Court says that the wording in the gist statement is not exactly right, then they can throw it all out, and all of our money and effort and time is gone.
It's
really hard to get done.
It would seem to me, Norma, that 250,000 signatures is nearly impossible to get in 3 months, if I do my math in my head very quickly.
It takes hundreds of people dedicated day in and day out, all day long. If you're a really good gatherer, you can stay out, 10, 12, 14 hours a day if there's enough daylight and good weather. And you work real hard, and that's why they pay people to do this, because it's hard to get volunteers to be that motivated. And that's a problem. You know, in some states, they have a very low amount of signatures that they can gather, and so it can really be done by volunteers. But in our state, because it's so difficult and the time is such a short amount of time, we almost have to hire people to do it.
Norma, how do we compare to other states? Could you give us an idea of how many signatures are required in other states? Let's say the bordering states, Kansas, Arkansas, Colorado, Texas.
You know, I'm not certain about the number of signatures. I know that there are much less than ours. I believe I remember there was one in California that it was only 10,000 signatures they had to get something on the ballot.
In the entire state of California, which is several times larger in population than Oklahoma.
Right.
Okay.
I do know that we are the most difficult. We have the largest amount of signatures that have to be gathered.
Right.
In Texas, I don't believe they even have an initiative system there.
Now, if they don't have an initiative system, what do they do?
There are a couple of states that don't.
And what do they do, the states that don't have an initiative system?
Well, they're just at the mercy of their legislators.
Okay.
Basically, we are too. If we cannot get a legislator to listen to us and put it on, for a vote, pass it through the House, then we don't get our subjects heard. So that's why we have a backup system. In our state constitution, Section 2/3, right of assembly and petition, it says the people have the right peaceably to assemble for their own good and to apply to those invested with the powers of the government for redress of grievances by petition, address, or remonstrance.
Right.
We have the right written into our state constitution, but our Secretary of State's office and the powers that be in this state kind of give us a hard time in trying to do that.
Well, here is now... I'm sort of a cynic, Norma, because I have a tremendous distrust of government, and unfortunately, it seems that old adage, power corrupts, and that saying. Anyway, but people get into office, even some with the best of intentions, and it would seem that there has to be a few of them, whether they be Republican or Democrat, who would be so appalled by the initiative process and so many other things aside from the initiative process that they would go there and we wouldn't have to petition them at all or even ask them to change the law, that they would go in there and change it, and fight for it without you, me, or anyone else expending 1 minute of time or energy. Now, why aren't they doing that?
Well, I can give you a quote from a legislator last year. I will not mention his name.
Please don't.
Someone that I approached last year about this issue, he was afraid that the people would just bring all kinds of issues to the ballot, and that it would cost extra money to run these things, you know, have an election for them. And it would also be, he was afraid of the subject matter. He was afraid that people would pick out dumb things that wouldn't be good down the road once we passed them. So, you know, he has no faith in the people. And, you know, it really hurt my heart for him to say that, because we are the people. We are the state. They are just our, you know, the people that are supposed to represent us. They're supposed to be working for us, not for their ego, not for their paycheck. They're supposed to go up there and do good for this state.
You know, you're right, Norma, and it really bothers me. But yet they can't, they make it so difficult, so from a practical point of view, it's impossible. But other states have lower requirements. They don't have that problem. I mean, other states don't have, you know, ridiculous requests. I mean, if they said, fine, you need 20,000 signatures, this is not going to be a ridiculous request. It's going to constitute a tremendous effort, tremendous amount of work to get even 25,000 signatures. That's one-tenth of what is required now.
Oh, yeah, right.
So, I mean, I don't stand their logic at all.
I know. And here, we do not know until we have gathered the signatures and turned it into the Secretary of State's office whether or not our wording is correct. They will not help us with that. They say they are not attorneys and they will not write or help us with the language in the gist statement. So we don't even know for sure whether or not that gist statement is going to pass muster when we get this all done.
Yeah, they're not attorneys, but they will knock them out. But they will discount them. That's nice.
You go to their website and you're supposed to look it all up and read it to the best of your knowledge and do the, you know, the best you can. And then why couldn't we have that approved before we go out and bother you know, all these people to sign their signature on this? I think the best way to handle this would be, one, to reduce the amount of signatures, two, to lengthen the amount of time that we have to gather the signatures, and to make sure that the gist statement is correct before we go out and gather signatures. They could help us with that. They are our employees.
Now, let me... is the Oklahoma House about evenly divided Republican-Democrat?
No, it's Republican this year. It took, you know, in the House we already were Republican, and then this year the Senate went Republican as well.
Yeah, but I mean it's about 45-55 or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean it's pretty close. Well.
It is, it's
fine. But previously they were Democrats, right? Were the majority party in the House?
Mostly, for most of the history of this state, it has been Democrat, yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna give you a hard time now for a second. But you consider yourself a Democrat. And my problem is that if you consider yourself a Democrat and the Democrats had control of the House and the Senate and they wouldn't change this, why wouldn't you be appalled at your party? Why would you fire them?
That is a good question. I don't know. You know, the people that I've talked to up there have told me over and over again, they said that they were afraid to do something because they were afraid they wouldn't get reelected. And so I guess they've been protecting their job all this time. It's not about what's right, but what will get them reelected. And we see that every year, even in Congress. People go up there and they spout all this footage of, you know, whatever the latest fear is, or we're going to take care of your latest fear, and that's how they get elected. And they keep getting elected that way. And we need to ask them the hard questions. We need to ask them if they would do what we would want them to do. If I came up there to the Capitol as a citizen and said, could you help this state with this matter, or could you help my family with this matter, they need to step forward and say, yes, I will, and give it the trial. You know, it has to go be introduced as a bill. It has to go through committee, so several other people have to approve it, and then it has to go to the full floor. and all those people have to, you know, majority of those people have to vote for it, and that would be fair. But they won't even listen. They won't take your questions seriously, because if it's not something that's, you know, the latest fear that they can get headlines with, they won't do it.
Yes. All right, Norma, let me just take out a second for station identification. Folks, this is okay. Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. We're pleased to have with us as our guest, Norma Sapp, the State Director of Oklahomans for Initiative Rights. And we're talking about initiative rights. We'd like you to call in 646-652-4620. I know we've had some problems before, I mean, early in our broadcast with our phone lines and whatever, but I think all that's cleared up now. So it's 646-652-4620. Please call in with your questions or your comments. Thank you. Norma, which initiative, are you working on an initiative now, or are there any initiatives that you know of that should be, that we should discuss?
Well, no, I'm not working on an initiative right now. I've given up on trying to do that because it's so laborious and expensive. What I'm going to do now is I formed this organization called Oklahomans for Initiative Rights, and I plan to, over the next couple of months, meet in different cities at libraries and do roundtable discussions with the citizens and get their input. And we've already kind of started to gather up the people that will work on my task force with me. And we will go to these different cities. We'll divide up the room of citizens that come, and each one of these task force members will take a different table and explain to them some of the things that is, you know, in our law now, and ask them their input of how we should change these things. When we're finished, we plan to publish this report with all of the citizens' input and take it to the legislature, hopefully in time to help a bill that's been introduced in the Senate.
Do you currently have any congressmen or any state senators, Republican, Democrat, or independent, who is backing you up and willing to take the charge on this?
Yes. Randy Brogdon, Senator Randy Brogdon from Owasso, Oklahoma, is going to introduce a bill that will help change the initiative system and make it more friendly for its citizens to use.
Okay, now what is he doing, though, specifically? How is he helping you out?
Well, by introducing that bill, he has helped me out. Now, I have to carry the ball to get the information to the rest of the legislature.
Oh, okay.
Going to the people and having the people contact their senators, and then they can approve this in the Senate and send it over to the House.
Boy, I mean, you're a tough gal. I don't think I can do that. I say, you know, I see so many brick walls. How many, and you must be much more of an optimist than I am, but let me ask you this. How many people do you think in the state or in the Senate or the House do you believe, if you had a vote today, how many would vote to amend the initiative rights to make them more fair?
Oh, gosh, that is a good question.
What's your guess?
My answer would be probably all the Republicans and not the Democrats.
You're kidding me. Well, wait a minute. Stop right there. Did I hear you say, excuse me, my voice is going again. Did I just hear you say that all the Republicans would?
That's my guess.
Why is that? You have to qualify. You can't walk away with that. You can't say that without saying why.
I actually have no idea, because I cannot count them until the session starts, and I go knock on doors and ask each one of them how they feel about the initiative system.
But why do you say the Republicans would amend it?
Because Randy is a Republican.
Oh, you're just taking it from his point of view. But and so you think you have the Republicans in your back pocket on this one?
Well, I'm hoping, and like you said, I'm an optimist. I am. I really am.
Okay.
But we had a pretty good vote last year, too. Randy introduced a similar bill last year, and most of the Republicans voted with him.
Okay.
So we're hoping that this year the same will come about. And now, especially if we have so many citizens with their input into this.
Well, do you think the Republicans voted with him because they were Republicans, or because they believed it was the right thing to do?
I think that they thought it was the right thing to do, And they also were aware of the brick wall that our Attorney General put up last year in trying to stop that bill.
Now, the Attorney General, that's Drew Edmondson, right?
Right.
And he's a Democrat, right?
He is a Democrat, and I don't know what his problem was with the changing the law last year, but there was a bill last year, and he thwarted it. He called in all the favors he could get, I guess, and stopped that bill from being heard on the Senate side.
Okay. Do you have any Democrats who would vote for you, with you, that you know?
You know, I did not find any last year.
Well, I find that absolutely amazing. I find that as absolutely amazing. It must be, there must be a tremendous amount of partisanship going on.
That's what it is.
You know?
It's not about what's right and wrong. It's about partisanship.
Yeah, it's got to be that way. I mean, if you consider what the how everyone is voting. But too bad the Republicans didn't have the majority, because would this take a majority vote or two-thirds vote? Do you know?
Oh, for constitutional change, it probably would be two-thirds, you know. I don't know all the gist right now. I'm kind of just flying blind here. I got mad about the whole thing, started the initiative, Citizens for Initiative Rights, and I'm working on trying to do this meeting with all the citizens, and I'm not even paying attention to what's on down the road yet.
Okay.
I don't know what we need once we get there. I'll work on that once we've turned in our report.
Okay.
Then I'll start knocking on doors and finding out exactly who we need to vote for.
How many meetings have you had? Have you had any meetings yet?
We had one conference a couple of weekends ago on a Saturday in Oklahoma City. We were hoping to get about 20 people there, and 71 people showed up.
71? That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
That's
people from out of state came.
Oh, was that the one that I attended?
Yes.
Oh, the one on November 15th. Yes. Okay. Have you had any? Have you had any individual group meetings? You know, you said you're going to go from library to library. You haven't had any of those yet.
No, we just started talking on the telephone and making arrangements for where we're going to hold all the meetings.
Yeah. Well, I was there and I was surprised there was standing room only. That was wonderful. That was a success.
Yeah. It shows that people are awakened, that they realize that our liberty is being lost, and that we really don't have control of our government, and we need to do something about it.
Yeah. Well, Norma, you're planning now these meetings. How do you get people to come to these meetings? How do you arrange that? Because people are so busy these days. I mean, parents don't even go to parents-teachers meetings these days anymore. So I'm wondering, how are you going to motivate people to come to the library, take their Saturday out, to listen to something that sounds strange to them, most likely?
Well, I'm going to follow the example that the League of Women Voters used. They came up with this idea for roundtable discussions in Oklahoma a few years ago, and I thought it was brilliant. And what they did was they used libraries, and they advertised in the local paper of that town, and they would invite people to come in and listen to their subject matter and to help them decide or make recommendations to the legislature about a subject. And that's exactly how I'm going to handle it. Every town has a newspaper with the local events that are happening and meetings that are happening. You post it there, and also the library will help you, you know, with posting it there at the library. And there are people out there that are activist-type people that will get involved. The League of Women Voters had a very good turnout for the thing that they did.
Well,
I'm optimistic.
During your meeting, what would you be telling these people, and what would you be asking them to do?
Well, we are going to have speakers come in. Probably Randy Brogdon will be one of the speakers. We're going to hold one of the meetings in Tulsa area, and he can come in and tell them about his experience with trying to do an initiative in this state. And once we inform the people of the roadblocks that are put up in front of the people when we try to do something, then we're hoping that their recommendations will be to improve the system to much better than it is now. we're going to ask them for their recommendation.
Right.
And, you know, I've had Democrats last year tell me that we didn't need to make any changes. It needed to be difficult to do.
Yeah.
So we'll see what the people have to say.
You know, Norma, I always thought you were a libertarian.
I am at heart.
I know that. You really sound like a libertarian at heart. Okay. As long as you say that, I'll feel better.
You know, I signed up as a Democrat when I was 18 and because I didn't know any better. And I started my job at the election board. I'm a precinct worker.
Yeah.
And I started that as a Democrat. And it's just, I've stayed that way because if I change, the two people that are with me, one of them are going to have to go. And they've been there a long time. So, because you have to have at least one different person. You can't have three Republicans or three Democrats.
Right.
At that table. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. You have to have a difference in the political affiliation at that table. So if I change my political affiliation, one of those old people will have to move.
Oh, okay. All right, I understand that. Okay.
And you know what? It doesn't make a dime's worth of difference. It really doesn't.
You're right.
I mean, read their platforms. They say they're different, but do you see them act different?
I haven't seen anything yet. In fact, as you know, already Barack Obama's being slammed. I even heard Juan Williams on one of the news channels actually criticize Barack Obama. I could not believe it. You know, he was a staunch supporter of his, and it seems like what he's doing now basically is bringing back the old guard, doing the same thing he's done before that everyone else has done, and now he's backpedaling on all of the programs he had, but he says he's going to introduce some bold initiatives now. Now, bold initiatives mean spending more money that we don't have, so I don't know where he's coming from or where he's really going to go. So I put him in the category as the same as all the other politicians. He won't make any tough decisions.
Well, I hope you're wrong, but I'm kind of seeing the same thing myself. It does sound like he's not going to change much, doesn't it?
Oh, no, it's a shame because during his term in office, he will probably be residing over a country which is would be in the worst financial condition that the country has ever been in, including the Depression. And the only thing that I've heard from him so far is we're going to spend more money, which is exactly how we got here in the first place. So I don't, quite frankly, understand at all what, you know, when he says change, we've squandered hundreds of billions of dollars. He's going to come to office and maybe allocate the money differently, but squander hundreds of billions of dollars. And I'm asking myself, what's the change? And I really don't see any. I'm not being critical. I don't care either way. I mean, I'm not a Republican or a Democrat, so I don't give either one of them any press. But I don't understand that. Maybe if you do, maybe you can explain it to me.
I do not understand it either. I think he just feels hopeless and he's trying to help us feel a little bit of hope. I really do. After getting as far as he has so far in the presidential elect, I'm sure he's been briefed on so much stuff that we don't know that he's probably scared to death. And so he's just trying to give everybody hope because it's very daunting looking.
Well, you know, I think hope can be very dangerous. And let me explain why. And I know this sounds very cruel, but when we have hope, sometimes it puts us in a position of inaction. And we just hope something will happen instead of making things happen. We don't need hope. We need action. And we need action by individuals and not by our government. Because our government only knows how to do one thing and make us happy. And the only thing that makes us happy is when the government spends money that we think they have. And I'm sorry I'm such a cynic, but I don't... someone's got to show me what they can do. I mean, we always talk about the wonderful things that FDR did, and now history unravels really what happened, and he exasperated the entire Depression. We would have had a Depression in 1933 had it not been for all those stupid programs. And yet people touted us, you know, being, we're going to have another FDR in office to get us out of this. Well, if he follows the FDR model, We will probably never get out of it, Norma. And this is not from me. These are from the economists, all the economists that I read. And it just doesn't seem like there is no change. And as far as hope is concerned, I don't know how you can have hope by spending more money and not doing anything.
I think what you just said is pretty enlightening. If people have hope, they probably will step back and just relax.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You're right. We all individually need to keep doing something.
Yeah, I always say, I hope I have no hope, because if I have, I hope I have no hope, because if I do, I'll sit there and I won't do anything. I mean, I would prefer to be in panic mode and say, all right, now I've got to do something. And the reason why I say that, you see, Norma, is I had my own business, and I've had my business collapse on a couple occasions, and we've had terrible times. And you want to know something? There was no hope at all. There was just hard work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, you can say, well, you had hope. I said, yeah, but I didn't have time to think about it. Or
right.
I didn't rely on somebody else to say, well, I hope that they will do something so that it'll make life easier for me.
Well, I'm not that kind of person, and so you can count on me. I don't hope for things to happen. I know I got to get out and do something.
Oh, yeah, I know that. That's what's interesting about what you're saying, and that's why I was just, I guess, expounding on this thing, because I think there's so many people that feel that way. And at Thanksgiving, you know, we got together with family, and family was talking about that, and I don't say anything when there's family around, because everyone just gets upset. But I listen to what they have to say, and really what they have to say is that, you know, hopefully something better will happen. Time will tell. You know, it'll all work itself out. You know, well, we just have to be patient. And I think to myself, it's exactly what we shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. Now,
we do have to have a moment of urgency in order to keep us motivated.
Yeah, I tell everybody, I'm at my best when things are at their worst. And I mean that. I mean, when things are going good, I get lazy. When things are bad, I get really good. Oh, let me just take a second for station identification. This is Joe Cristiano. You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. I have as my guest, Norma Sapp, and we're talking about initiative rights and other things. And if you have anything on your mind, you may call 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. We do apologize that we are not broadcasting over Restore the Republic Radio this evening, because we had a connection problem or echo problem, and so we had a disconnect. So I apologize for that. We will be back on Restore the Republic Radio next Sunday evening. All right, Norma, tell us, what is, now that you have this initiative rights, what other things were you involved in previously to the initiative rights, program that you're on now? What other things have you been lobbied for example?
Well, for the last, since 1990, I've been trying to change the marijuana laws. And it's been an uphill battle, and it hasn't gotten any better at all. But I haven't given up. I still think that it's going to move into Oklahoma eventually. We have two more states that changed their laws to medical marijuana over November 4th. And now one quarter of the U.S. population now lives in a state that has access to medical marijuana. So that's an improvement. And when our government stops locking people up because they use their choice of medicine, that will be a wonderful day.
I know. You know, I could never, ever understand that. To me, that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. If someone is taking, I mean, morphine is an illegal substance, but it's dispensed at hospitals. I remember when I had an accident, my motorcycle accident, they had to give me morphine for the pain. And I'm sure I couldn't go out and buy morphine at my health food store.
No. So, no, but you should be able to, under this United States Constitution, be able to treat yourself if you felt like it.
Even if
it was harmful to you, you should be able to do it under our Constitution.
Yeah. I agree. Now, exactly what are you petitioning for regarding marijuana?
Well, in this state, I would like to see the medical marijuana laws changed, first off, because If we had that, we would have a lot less prisoners locked up in our prisons that are costing us a lot of money. I know of one particular prisoner who was in a wheelchair. He had MS, and they locked him up for possession of a pound. And when you have MS, you have to smoke quite a bit to keep your muscles limber. And so he had quite a bit because that's how much he needed for a whole month. But anyway, he got locked up, and he died inside of our prison, but he cost us a whole lot of money before he died. And we lock up some people every day that have illnesses that are costing us money. Because, you know, when we take them into our jails and our prisons, we are then responsible for their health care.
Right. What do our legislators, what's their logic behind not approving that?
Well, I don't know. You know, I think they've just lied for so long that they can't back up and say, oh, wait a minute, maybe we lied. It was a lie to begin with when they changed the law in 1937. Doctors were prescribing cannabis tincture and preparations of cannabis back then. It took away most of the pharmacopoeia available to the doctors back then. So why they thought they needed to change it, I've heard the story that it was really about hemp.
Yes.
Because hemp was a competitive product with the new plastics that were coming out. Whether it was or whatever it wasn't, we had lies told in Congress, and we changed the laws, and now they cannot seem to back up and say, okay, let's look at this. Let's take a real scientific look at this. And, you know, the medicine of today is standardized doses. It's guaranteed by the FDA, and you can't do that with a plant. But it shouldn't matter, because we should have the right to heal ourselves regardless of what plants we want to use.
Yeah.
So I guess we just have to wait for the right man to be in office before we can change things, because we have bills introduced in Congress right now. Barney Frank has introduced two bills.
Is Barack Obama pro medical marijuana use? You know,
the only thing that he has said in public is that he will stop the federal raids into the states that have medical marijuana on their books.
Well, that's unconstitutional anyway. The states are sovereign. What the hell is he talking about?
I know, but it does happen. It happens every day.
I guess the federal government trumps states' rights like these days. I guess that's the reverse now.
Yeah, I know. No, they brought it. They changed the law, or allowed the law to the federal government to go into these states by looking at an old precedent of agricultural law, and it was about interstate transportation. So how they use that, I don't know, but now they're standing on that, and that's why they think they have control of the state's right to change these laws.
Yeah.
But anyway, he said he would stop that. Now, he did not say, when questioned, that he wanted it legalized. I think that it should be regulated and legalized just like alcohol.
Well,
that way everybody can be out instead of having to hide and traffic in the dark and have crime and the profits go to the terrorists. I think all that is just so wrong.
Well, that's right. What we are doing is we are, in fact, financing terrorists by making it illegal. Let me ask you this. Why do you think it has to be regulated?
The reason it needs to be regulated is because we cannot control anything that is in the black market. Unless we have it in a, you know, upfront, legal, regulated, then it's underground in a black market. All the profits are not accounted for. We don't know who's getting the money. All that has to be regulated in order to stop the crime.
I don't understand that. I mean, I understand if it's regulated, don't you have a higher propensity to have a black market than if it's not regulated?
No. Unregulated means it's under the table, black market. Nobody's watching anybody. Nobody can tell you, you know, whether or not you can mix something in with it or whether or not you can sell it to minors. Nobody can tell you anything. If it's regulated, then we have rules.
But what difference does it make? I mean, if it's right now, it's regulated to a point that you can't have it, and yet it's in. I mean, all drugs. And,
no, it's just outlawed. It's not regulated.
Right, it's not regulated. Well, I mean, what I'm saying, it's regulated. It's regulated to the nth degree. You can't even have it, and that stands true for, you know, all street drugs, so to speak. And yet, they are permissive. I mean, it's all over the place. So, I guess the way I see it is, if it was not regulated, and companies manufactured it and whatever, and there was competition in the marketplace, there would be no underground, because it would all be above board. And if someone
not a system of regulation, though,
why?
That's what we call regulation. Just like when we changed the laws to re-legalize alcohol, we put it in a system of regulation. They put a tax stamp on it. They tell you where you can buy it and how, you know, how much profit that person can make. That's a system of regulation.
I know, but why should we have that on alcohol?
Well, in a true libertarian sense, you're exactly right.
Yeah, my point being is that, you know, the marketplace, if I made liquor that was poisonous, people wouldn't, you know, and people that know who I was, first of all, they wouldn't buy it. If they didn't, they died. I would be liable. I'd wind up going to jail for murder. And if they didn't catch me, no one would buy my liquor anyway. I mean, it would just like anything else. I mean, I never really understood regulation. I can never follow it all the way through in my pea brain. I can never understand that.
Well, you're exactly right. We should be free to completely trade as we want, and buyer beware.
Oh yeah, I mean, so if I grew marijuana in my backyard and I had a little stand in the front yard, you know, lemonade and marijuana, you know, 5 cents, you know, just like when kids have lemonade stands in their front yards. There's no regulation there. You drink it. You drink it out of your own risk. Like kids, I mean, it could be lemonade or it could be their dog's urine. You don't know. I mean, you drink it, right? Anyway, I'm giving you a hard time there because I'm not feeling very well and my voice is starting to go. Norma, are there any final words you'd like to tell our listeners? And if there's any websites or anything that you would encourage our listeners to do, please take this opportunity. It's all yours.
Yes, we have a website. It's called OK4IR, which stands for Initiative Reform. OK4IR is our website.
Okay. And will you be in, do you have any plans of being in any particular city soon in Oklahoma?
Yes, Tulsa. We're going to start with Tulsa, and it'll most likely be the weekend of the 18th of December.
Okay, everyone listening from Tulsa, December.
Sorry, the weekend of the 20th of December.
I have a calendar right in front. I just happen to have it. That's right. That Saturday is the 20th. Folks, right before Christmas, December 20th here in Tulsa, all you Tulsa listeners, want you to be at that meeting or else you'll be punished. How about that, Norma? Is that okay?
Yeah, that'll work.
Okay. Norma, thank you so much for being our guest this evening. I really appreciate it, and we really appreciate all of the work that you've done for us.
Thank you for having me on.
Okay. Take care now. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Boy, she's a real activist, isn't she? Isn't that wonderful? We need more people like Norma. This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support. We'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends. And let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. If you're free and liberated, your life is in your own hands. What would that freedom come from responsibility and risk? The government's like training wheels. You now have a controlled mind that isn't any more fun. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal," and the government hates competition. Love that. With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.